Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Clubs in Forum. Connect your intellect. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum. I'm Melissa Griffin, co-host of Necessary Conversation and columnist for the San Francisco Examiner. Tonight we're joined by all 16 mayoral candidates, as you can see. So, exactly, let's get started. Let's give the candidates a big round of applause. So I'm going to start by laying out in broad brushstrokes the way that this event is going to go tonight. In the first round, the candidates are going to get 30 seconds to introduce themselves. In the second round, I'll be asking them each questions and then a series of follow-up questions on topics that they have picked. In the third round, we're going to do a series of yes or no questions, and we're trying to get some politicians to give some straight answers. And the round after that, we will pair up the candidates on particular issues so that they can sort of debate and have a conversation two at a time on a particular issue. Finally, each candidate will have 15 seconds to give their idea to change the world. And then we'll move into the last part of the session, which involves presentations by local innovators, after which the candidates will have a minute to discuss how they would use those innovations to make life better here in San Francisco. I know it sounds really complicated, but I assure you it's going to fly right by. And the candidates are fully aware of how much time they have tonight to speak, so don't feel sorry for them if at the end of 30 seconds or a minute or whatever it is, we shut their microphones off. Okay, so let's begin with the introductory round where each candidate gets 30 seconds to make their case as to why they should be your mayor. The candidates do not know what order I'm about to call their names in, so I can make sure they all stay awake and listening. First up, Wilma Pang, 30 seconds.
First one, good evening. Why I'm running? Because of the arts. It's very important in San Francisco, and I'm speaking on behalf of seniors, artists, students. So this November, I will speak up for the grassroots.
Thank you, Wilma. Tony Hall.
I'm Tony Hall. With 35 years' experience as a public servant, I know when the common good is being served. Our city is still being run by special interests who treat you as an ATM machine. We need serious solutions, not political ones. Whether it's runaway pensions or developer giveaways, it's all the same. I'm running to clean up City Hall and to take this city back to the people it's supposed to be serving. I need your help. Join me.
Thank you, Tony. Terry Baum.
I am a pioneer lesbian playwright. I began in politics as the personal aide to the legendary Bella Abzug in her very first race for office in Manhattan. I'm the only Green candidate, and I believe that the Green Party values of grassroots democracy, social justice, nonviolence, and ecological wisdom can be very, very helpful to this city at this moment. And I believe...
And that's how it works. Next up, and everyone, just so you know, that's Caroline right here. So she's the one, she's the timer. And so candidates, please look to her. And yes, thank you for your service. Phil Ting, you're next.
Hi, I'm Phil Ting. In my campaign to reset San Francisco is organizing thousands of San Franciscans every single day. We're organizing to make sure that you have more of a voice at City Hall. We've had over 11,000 folks join us on Facebook and 110,000 people visit our website just this last month. And more importantly, we think we can improve City Hall by having all your voices heard, but while also having a good time. Check out our site to check out the Muni Survival Kit as well as see the NJUDA, race the NJUDA Express. So please join us to make City Hall better. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Paul Currier.
My name is Paul Currier. I'm a candidate for mayor. I'm the only candidate with a program for a public bank. If we set up a public bank in San Francisco, like in the state of North Dakota, we would have $1 to $5 trillion of money to use for all our infrastructure needs. Based on that, I'd like to do some other things like set up a whole new free muni system, et cetera, and take care of our schools, fully fund our schools. So I look forward to your vote.
Thank you, Paul. Michaela Aliotto-Pierre.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Commonwealth Club. It is my pleasure to be here tonight. I look forward to this debate. I sat on the Board of Supervisors for 7 years. I am the mother of three, my daughter Giovanna. My third grader is in the audience tonight. Hello, sweetheart. I look forward to the evening. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Michaela. Leland Yee.
My name is Leland Yee. I'm running for mayor. I have had the pleasure of serving the city and county of San Francisco for over 23 years on the Board of Education, Board of Supervisors, and then the state legislature. I have a proven record of results, balanced budget, worked hard for improving education. That's why the teachers have endorsed me, worked hard to defend our environment. That's why Sierra Club has endorsed me. And then finally, the working people of the city and county of San Francisco have endorsed me. Thank you.
Thank you, Leland. John Avalos.
Good evening. My name is John Avalos, and I am running for mayor of San Francisco. I come to politics through social work and community organizing and labor organizing. I'm raising two kids in San Francisco. They are public school kids, and my wife is a public school teacher. We are dedicated public servants, and we want to put neighborhoods and people first as we run this city. I believe change comes best when we work together to make it happen. I want to create structures in government for greater public input to make sure we have the transparency and the ideas that come from communities to make government truly work.
Hi, I'm Joanna Reese. I'm not a City Hall insider. I'm an entrepreneur and an educator. I have a proven track record of creating jobs, having supported more than 60 Bay Area companies who've created thousands of jobs. I've also spent more than a decade bringing innovation into our public schools to support teachers and improve student outcomes. And I really look forward to the discussion tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanna. Jeff Adachi.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm running for mayor. My name is Jeff Adachi because we need somebody who's going to stand up for the people. As public defender, I've spent my entire career standing up and giving people a voice and solving problems. We have too many people without jobs. We have too many businesses that can't get a decent start in the city. We have affordable housing, which is only for a very few. We need to change this. And the way that we change this is electing a mayor.
Watch the walk.
It's an unfortunate time to cut off. Thank you, Jeff. Emil Lawrence.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. My name is Emil Lawrence. I'm running for mayor for one reason, that no one at this table has the guts to terminate up to 25% of the employees in the city and county of San Francisco. I've been a resident for 42 years, and I've had enough. I've watched citations increase and exorbitant go into orbit and other fees in this city, and I'm running for mayor to stop all of that once and for all, including to solve the muni problem. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Emil. Ed Lee.
Good evening. I've been your mayor for the last 9 months, and I've worked really hard to make sure our city is economically solvent and economically successful. I want to continue that. I want to create jobs, sustain more jobs in the city, and make sure that our economy is very strong. That's what I want to do as your next mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Dennis Herrera.
I'm running for mayor because I think this is a transformative, seminal election, and the choices that we make in this election are not just about the next 4 or 8. But whether San Francisco can be a model for the 21st century American city needs to be 50 or 75 years from now. And it's going to take a special leader, someone who has a vision to assure that that model can take hold, and a track record of experience that demonstrates that they know how to use the power of government to get things done. That's what I've done for 10 years as your city attorney, and that's the kind of leadership I want to bring to Room 200.
Thank you, Dennis. David Chu.
Good evening. I'm David Chu. For the past 15 years, I have served San Francisco as a criminal prosecutor, a civil rights attorney, the founder of a technology company, and the president of your Board of Supervisors. I've been proud, as the president of the board, to have passed budget reform, tough ethics rules, to make sure we're creating tens of thousands of units of new housing, and to keep important 21st century companies in San Francisco. I've been proud of my leadership of bringing folks together to get things done, and that's what I'll continue to do as your next mayor.
Thank you, David. Forgive me for what I'm about to do, this name. Cesar Ascaruns.
Good evening. My name is Cesar Ascaruns. I am the only successful business person which is running from here. I'm asking you for your help. If you want the same, you can choose whatever you want. But I think for the last 4 years, I built the Mission District. I built the Noe Valley Excelsior District all by myself. You can, my record speaks by itself. So you want the same right here. You want somebody else, it will work for you. No, you're working for me. Thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, Caesar. Bevan Dufty.
I will be a mayor who builds to the big picture of a better city by focusing on the basics. Muni, schools, parks and playgrounds, homeless services. I believe in the people that work for the city, and I want us to have a dynamic, responsive, and effective city government that's based on outcomes, where we're making investments and making sure those investments work. Thank you.
Thank you, Bevan. Thank you, candidates. That concludes round one. We're going to move right into round two. In this round, each candidate has picked a subject, and what I will do is ask them a question about that subject, and they will have 60 seconds to respond. Then I will ask a follow-up question to them, and they will have 30 seconds to respond to my follow-up question. Now, each candidate can see before them that they have a card with an R on it, and R is supposed to stand for rebuttal. Everyone has a floating rebuttal. Now, R can mean rebuttal, or it can also mean I really, really want to talk about the subject. So if a candidate is talking about something that you would like to weigh in on, just show me your R card at the end of the exchange, and you will have 30 seconds in which to weigh in. Candidates should know that you only have one chance to use your R card. If you don't use it, you don't get to carry it over to another round. In addition, more than one candidate can weigh in on the same subject. If one subject gets everyone particularly riled, then by all means, five or six of you can go ahead and cash them on in. We put this out there just because we wanted everyone to have an opportunity to weigh in on a subject that maybe they didn't pick or maybe something that they feel very strongly about in response to something that one of the candidates say. So we're hoping it gets a little dicey here. That is the goal. So those are what our cards are, and if you don't use them, you can just take them home with you. All right, so we will begin. Let's begin with Caesar, who asked to have a question about affordable housing. So, Caesar, as mayor, what would you do, if anything, to make housing more affordable in San Francisco? You have 1 minute. That's you. Me? That's you.
Affordable housing in San Francisco is a very hard topic. The thing is, I mentioned before, affordable housing, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. If we can go to Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Bolivia, Peru, in a block used to be one house, one mansion. So the only way they're supposed to do in those countries, they went up 4, 5, 6 floors, whatever, parking and the rest 20 stories high. They solved that problem. But the thing is, I was in Bernal Heights when I mentioned that. It says you cannot change the character of the neighborhood. San Francisco, everybody likes to live in San Francisco, but with education we can start first. The people to which they have less money, they can start increasing their brains, they can start with education, they can improve, and they can be very successful in the labor force. That way we can improve, and we are not going to depend on the affordable housing. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Caesar, I saw on your website that among your four children, you have one son who's an electrician and one who is a firefighter. Do you believe that we should be looking to build housing for mid-level income persons as well for jobs like these who would be really useful in case of an emergency?
I will encourage the developers, the construction companies, to build studios, which is, it can be affordable. That's the best way we can do San Francisco, because it's the 75% of the people in San Francisco, there are renters. So if we can work with the private companies and the city helping, the state and the federal government, that's the one in charge, we can achieve a beautiful housing, a beautiful affordable housing, whatever you want to call. But the thing is, San Francisco is one of the most beautiful cities in the world, and it's a small.
All righty. Does anyone wish to use their R card on the subject of affordable housing? Tony Hall? Tony Hall, 30 seconds.
Might as well use it up now. Back in 2002, I introduced a program called HOPE. Many, many houses in San Francisco are way beyond the average person's affordability range. HOPE allows landlords to voluntarily sell the apartments that tenants live in as deeded units. This is a whole new level of affordability for middle to lower income class San Franciscans. It'll change the ratio of tenants to homeowners. It'll increase the revenue to the city. This is the only way that we can.
Thank you, Tony. Next question is for Emil Lawrence, who asked for a question about public pensions. Mr. Lawrence, you stated before that you have something called the Lawrence Plan for dealing with the city's budget woes. Please describe how you see the current pension situation and how the Lawrence Plan is the answer.
Thank you for that question. The pension and salary liability problem in San Francisco, according to civil grand jury of 2009 that investigated, said we are entering a rate of bankruptcy by 2017, 18, or 19 just based on two unions, not 44 other unions that are in the city and county of San Francisco. The city at this given time has not looked at that seriously. They're pretending like the A plan or the Mr. Adachi's plan or Mr. Lee's plan is going to solve the problem. It's not going to solve the problem without raising your taxes, without adding another 5,000 to 10,000 parking meters in San Francisco, raising property taxes and various other taxes. The problem is that it's compounding at 8% a year, both salaries and pensions. My solution is the Lawrence Plan. I'm going to cut up to 25% of the fat cat payroll in San Francisco, not the lower end, but the upper end. That's going to cure the pension and salary problem because it's coming out of revenues and not coming out of a fund. And I thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. You know, as mayor, you would be entitled to a salary of some $252,000, making you one of those highly paid city employees. Are you willing to take a pay cut as mayor? And if so, what amount? 30 seconds.
That's a hell of a question here. I don't know if I'm going to answer it specifically. I just say this, and I'm going to give you a roundabout answer, is that I've lived in this city for 42 years. I got out of here when I exited the United States Navy as a USN ex-submariner and AO-109 oil man from an oiler. I've seen and heard every story in this city related to pensions, liabilities, salaries. And I see that we're at an edge right now that it has to stop.
Thank you, Emil. Would anyone like to use an R card here? Okay. Mayor Lee?
Proposition C is on the ballot as the mayor-led and united consensus plan that we put forth for pension reform in the city. We were very serious in getting all of the unions together with all of the management in the city to make sure that we had a comprehensive plan, and we've done that. And we've done it in the right way. We've worked with the labor unions in this city, and we've honored their vested rights to make sure that they give up more of their cost and give into the cost to help us balance it. Please vote for Prop C.
Thank you. Public Defender Jeff Adachi would like to use his R card. How interesting. 30 seconds.
With all due respect to the mayor, Prop C does not solve the pension problem in the city. When Mayor Lee took office, he said that he would need a solution that would save between $300 and $400 million. He came back with a solution that saved $50 million. Proposition D saves $400 million more. We won't need his street bond, and we won't need a sales tax that's going to be a regressive tax on people. We can instead pass real reform and make sure that our basic services are protected.
All right. Thank you. Paul Currier would like to use his R card. 30 seconds.
Thank you. I was the only candidate before Jeff Adachi came into this race that fully supported Prop D. I helped put it on the ballot. If you want to see San Francisco file bankruptcy, vote for Prop C. Ed Lee for bankruptcy. You know, these guys in Vallejo and Orange County said that they weren't going to file bankruptcy. They filed bankruptcy and stole everybody's pension. Mayor Lee said that he wasn't going to run for mayor. Do you trust him?
Alrighty, moving on. Moving on. Dennis Herrera asked for a question about public transportation. Dennis, according to your website, you have a four-point plan to fix Muni. Please discuss your four-point plan.
Thank you. There's a number of things. First, we need to institute accountability in the organization. Prop G that passed last year gives us, for the first time, the ability to collectively bargain over salary, work rules, discipline, arbitration. For the first time, we'll be able to have accountability in the organization. Second, we need to institute the Transit Effectiveness Plan, which was a strategic plan passed in 2008 with $180 million worth of improvements in rationalizing service and redirecting Muni to high-profile routes. We need to implement it. Third, we have to fix our funding problems and stop stealing operating accounts to fund capital projects like the Central Subway. And fourth, We need to make sure that we fully institute bus rapid transit down the Van Ness Corridor and the Geary Corridor, because we're going to be able to start bringing a whole new group of riders to Muni that will then be willing to invest in the system. You do those four things, we can put Muni on a much better path to servicing the entirety of the city and county of San Francisco in the way that they deserve.
Thank you, Dennis. One second, Terry. We'll get to you. Let me do the follow-up. But Dennis, on your website, your third point is that Muni must prove that it is being responsible with taxpayers' dollars, being more responsible with taxpayers' dollars than it already has. At the same time, the city must provide Muni with the funds it needs to succeed. While I don't think anyone would disagree with that, exactly how do you plan to do this where everyone ever who has tried has failed?
Well, as I said earlier, I think that I'm a big believer in the culture of an organization. And you have to remember, for 35 years, the problems in the managerial capability of Muni managers and the organization were there, so people didn't have to demand accountability. For 35 years, none of the things I mentioned earlier were collectively bargained. So you had an organization that knew it couldn't be managed, and managers that knew that they couldn't hold an organization accountable. For the first time, we have an opportunity to put a new paradigm in place.
Thank you very much. I know, Terry, you wanted to go. 30 seconds.
I think to get people out of their cars, we need to make Muni magnificent. Not only reliable, but fun, cool. I think every single underground station should be an art gallery with murals and mosaics. Every bus shelter should be a work of art. We can use the incredible talent, the artistic talent in this city, and combine it with public transit and make public transit an actual attraction that people love.
Thank you, Terry. Bevan Dufty.
Please visit bevanduffy.com. I talk in a plain manner about what we can do. I call it rainy days and Mondays. 12.9% of the time, operators aren't showing up for a bus or rail shift. That means one out of every eight times a bus or streetcar isn't there, or you're having to pay overtime to do it. I'm about lifting the human capital, about engaging our drivers, being a bus and rail yard mayor, and I pledge to cut absenteeism in half within the first 9 months that I'm mayor.
All righty, that's bold. Excellent. Emil, you had your R card up. Would you like to use it? You would like to respond. Okay, 30 seconds.
I'm one of the few candidates that have been speaking in front of Muni for almost 5 years now. I was one of the guys that basically stood up and said when they hired Nate Ford, which was approved by Mr. Dennis Herrera at that time, several, including the mayor, a man that was accused of embezzlement in Atlanta where he came from, a man that also had a sexual harassment suit, a man also that had no academic credentials whatsoever or any degree approved in any state in the United States, was running a $1 billion organization and ran the biggest deficit in history while I was there.
Thank you, Emil. Anyone else? Phil Ting, 30 seconds.
We could actually fund the Muni deficit just by making every single train go 1 minute faster. That's we could save $20 million just by doing that. All we need to do is start implementing that TEP. We could have bus stop priorities. We could make sure that they have dedicated traffic lanes, that stoplights are prioritized also. We can make sure that people can board through back doors. And we can make sure we streamline and make hold that system accountable. It really doesn't take much, but we got to do it now. That's why we're organizing 8 town halls over the next 4 weeks. We hope you'll join us at one of them.
Thank you, Phil. Hang on. Oh, Cesar, yes, you would like to, 30 okay. seconds.
The first thing I will do with Muni, clean up that corruption. For a long time, that department is one of the most corrupted organizations in the city. I used to be a parking commissioner, I know that. So the problem with Muni is you have to have a professional and the tough to the level. Too many managers, too much money, 80% of the tickets you know we pay goes to the Muni. People, they punch the car in, they don't work, they come back at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, in the afternoon, and they punch out. Corruption out. Thank you.
Thank you, Caesar. John Avalos, 30 seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you. I live in the Excelsior District. It's pretty far from downtown San Francisco. We have also the Outer Mission that's pretty far from downtown San Francisco. Many neighborhoods this far from downtown San Francisco don't get the same level of service. And we call ourselves a transit-first city. It sounds very hollow in these neighborhoods like the Sunset. If you're an end Judah rider, you get switched back before you get to the end of the line. I want to make sure that MUNI works all across San Francisco. We can build the infrastructure to make it work to the very far-flung parts of our borders.
Thank you, John. Just hang there near the microphone because your question's up next. For a question about jobs, as a member of the Board of Supervisors, you have been a driving force for local hiring laws that mandate that publicly financed construction be performed by residents of San Francisco. As a mayor, how would you continue that agenda?
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of the work that was done on the local hire ordinance, and it was an effort, landmark legislation that took a huge community effort to make happen, a coalition of black, brown, and Asian communities, small businesses, large businesses. I want to look at how we can look at our current assets we have in the city. We have a port right now that does not have a lot of maritime usage that could be a source of many, many jobs. I want to look at over 8 years of my administration to build a port to be able to create, you know, more jobs for local residents that are actually going to be blue and possibly green-collar jobs as well. I want to look at public power in San Francisco and how we can have a public power system that could actually support the job creation as well. I also discuss a municipal bank in San Francisco. We need state law to have a municipal bank, but perhaps we can invest our dollars in local banks that are going to be doing more to support the local economy, and that will ensure that we can actually have local job creation in all these sectors, including housing development, which would be a great source of restoring housing in parts of San Francisco where it's very dilapidated, like the Excelsior Visitation.
Thank you, John. Any local hiring law must have residency requirements. What is your strategy for making sure that non-residents don't game our system by, for example, establishing phony residences or P.O. boxes, et cetera?
Well, we've actually drafted legislation to assure that there isn't any phony residency that's offered by people seeking work. We want to make sure that people who actually live and sleep in San Francisco can get jobs. So we actually have the legislation discuss domicile, where you sleep. And so you have to prove that you actually sleep in San Francisco with proper bills that you might have for PG&E. A P.O. box is not going to work. Your residency at your union is not going to work. It's actually something that you're going to have to prove, and we'll be looking at.
Thank you. Anyone wish to use their R card? All righty. Next, Terry Baum. Question about tax reform. Terry, as mayor, would you look for new ways to increase revenue, and how would you do it?
Yes, I would. And I believe that we need to have a personal progressive income tax in San Francisco. This is something that's not a wild, crazy wide-eyed idea. They have it in New York, many cities in Ohio. We have a issue right now. Our funding is being cut. The basic services, the parks are being starved for money. The MUNI service is being cut. Meanwhile, in our country, the wealthy are getting richer and richer. We need to find a way to bring that money back down. There isn't any reason why we have to make do with less. If we even had the same tax structure that we had under Ronald Reagan on a national level, we would not have the financial problems we have now. We must, in San Francisco, demand that the rich people in San Francisco, of which they are many, pay more, and that all of us pay a little.
Okay. Just as a follow-up question, in light of the fact that state law prohibits cities and counties from imposing income taxes, how is it that you propose to tax the income of the wealthiest?
Well, in fact, Mark, our Senator Mark Leno is working on this right now, and it's something that we have to make a case for. The truth is that the cities are getting cut and cut and cut. We're losing both federal money and state money. We, as San Francisco, have to make a decision to tax ourselves if we are going to have the amenities of city life. I mean, do we want to have a beautiful Golden Gate Park or not?
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else want to weigh in? Alrighty. Next up, Joanna Reese. Question about K-12 education. Joanna, you recently announced a ballot committee in support of Proposition H on this November's ballot. Please describe that proposition and why you are supportive of it.
Proposition H is about us returning to a high-quality neighborhood school model and not having a lottery system. We have lost families at an alarming rate in San Francisco, and I encourage anyone who wants to learn about this to come to a bus stop with me in the morning. What you'll hear from so many people is, I might not be here in November because my child is starting school next year and we want to get located in another city so we can get settled before school starts. Or, I've lost all my friends because they've left because their children are about to enter school. Or most distressing, the 7-year-old girl I met on the bus last week and the 11-year-old boy I met on the bus last week who were spending over an hour to get to school alone across town on a public muni bus. That, to me, is absolutely unacceptable. We're not supposed to leave children home alone under the age of 12. To allow young children to be going across town because there's not a high-quality school in their neighborhood is absolutely not what's right for the city. We deserve a world-class education system. We'll get there with high-quality neighborhood schools. Right, excellent.
Jonah, how do you respond to people who believe that neighborhood schools lead to gentrification and less diverse experiences for our school-age kids?
The most important issue is that we prepare every child with a great education so that they can succeed in the future, and that has to be the highest level priority. I think once we achieve that, we can work on other issues that you talk about related to gentrification, but this is what we owe every single child in this community, and we owe every child in America.
Thank you. Michaela, 30 seconds.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Joanna, for your response to that. Neighborhood schools is one of the most important issues, I believe, that the city is faced with. And what I'd like to add to the comments that were made is that when we have neighborhood schools in our communities, our neighborhoods and our communities come up around them. What most people don't know is that it's the African-American communities out of the Bayview, the Asian communities out of the Richmond, who want it the most. So when we start talking about diversity, we have to realize that we're pushing our children out of their homes and we're not giving them support in the communities that they need.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. No, you already used yours. Okay. Next up, Bevan Dufty. Question about K-12 education. Bevan, what is your plan for bettering the school system in San Francisco?
Well, I definitely think that we have to extend and renew Proposition H, which was passed in 2004. I was very involved with Tom Amiano in getting that measure passed. It's providing $31 million to our public schools to do things around school libraries, science and math, arts. We have an arts master plan. But I want to have a success plan for every school. I disagree with the comments that were made most recently. Parents want their kids to go to a great school. Only 25% of the parents in my cohort with kids entering kindergarten chose the closest school to them. 75% didn't. But the problem is that most of the parents are seeking a slot in one of 12 schools, and we have to improve other schools. And that might be like Alvarado, for example. Their parents raised $250,000. Some of the schools in the Southeast, the parent communities can't raise that much, and we have to bring the business community in and bring those assets together. I was very involved with kindergarten to college. K to C is something you should check out. Half the entering kindergartners now have college savings account. We have to create a college-bound culture for every student entering our schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Bevan, given that the Board of Education is a state entity, how much impact do you think that a mayor can really have and can really expect to have on our San Francisco school system?
I think a tremendous amount. My child started public school. I'm proud of that. I think I'm setting an example among the candidates running for mayor, and I'm experiencing it, the good, the bad, the difficult, and understanding why, as a city, we have to focus on it. I helped to create a program at Mission High School, ASAP. Visit missionasap.org to learn how we created a college-bound culture. Also focusing on the arts, but we also need vocational education. Liz John O'Connell has brought back the construction trades.
Thank you. Wilma Peng, 30 seconds.
I'm a professor at City College, and I've taught kindergarten through university level, and I've been in education for 35 years. The saddest thing is we're losing teachers. Why? For one thing, it's very important. We don't have enough affordable housing for teachers. And then for college students, fee and tuition is just outrageous.
Thank you. Dennis Herrera, 30 seconds.
First, Supervisor Ducte is exactly right in extending Proposition H, but we also have to go to a community schools model, which is not really utilized here in San Francisco. But if you want to strengthen the leverage and partnership between the city and the school district, you have to have schools as community schools, where we're providing city services that aren't being provided by the school district. Rec and park programs, daycare, health and wellness programs, transit programs, to help strengthen that partnership, show that you're providing value to the kids that are there, the parents and the kids that are there, and the surrounding community where they have kids in that school.
Thank you. Anyone else? All righty. Next up, Jeff Adachi. Here's a question not about pensions. Jeff, many people know about your involvement in reforming the city's pension system. What are other fiscal reforms that you would institute as mayor in order to address our budget shortfalls and stagnant revenues?
Competitive bidding. I would stop the pay-to-play culture at City Hall. Let me give you an example from the New York Times today, the Bay Citizen. It says, a manager at Geo Lorries, one of the largest passenger shuttle companies in San Francisco International Airport, donated and reimbursed as much as $8,000 in contributions from employees to the election campaign of interim mayor Ed Lee, employees told the Bay Citizen this week. The contributions were made in mid-September, shortly after the airport officials reversed the decision to overhaul curbside parking that would have given a dozen shuttle companies at the airport an equal opportunity to solicit existing passengers. And there's been an investigation opened up by the California Fair Political Practice Commission. This has got to stop. It's costing us hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's got to stop.
As a follow-up, Jeff, our city's Department of Technology has been particularly beset with contract issues because we get a certain program that only one company can serve as an upgrade. How would you specifically go about dealing with this and other competitive bidding intractable problems?
You know, DTIS contracts out a lot of its work, and they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars where they don't need to. It's one of the most inefficient departments in the city, and I would change that. I work on the justice system, which, I tell you, we've been working on this thing for 10 years because we can't get the support. But it comes down to competitive bidding. I mean, if you look at the garbage contract that Mayor Ed Lee entered 10 years ago, we're actually paying $15 million more because he approved a contract that was 46%.
Thank you, Jeff. David Chu, 30 seconds.
First of all, I will agree with Jeff that I think the allegations that have been raised today are troubling. City Hall cannot be for sale. I've been working on the issue of IT in San Francisco in recent years. We have 7 different email systems. We ought to have one. We have 36 data centers. We ought to have one main one and one redundant backup. We have 40 mini IT departments. We're spending several $100 million on information technology. And as someone who started a technology company, I find that offensive. We have to do better, and it's one of the reasons I'm running for mayor. I'm sick of...
Thank you. Next up, Tony Hall. Question about public pensions. Tony, what do you see as the most pressing issue regarding public employee pensions, and what is your plan to deal with that issue?
You know, folks, we have a $7 billion unfunded liability when it comes to pension and health care costs, and it's growing at $400 million a year. It's a serious problem, and it can't be fixed with politically motivated measures in the ballot box. Ed Lee himself said anything short of $300 million a year to reduce that deficit is not acceptable, yet he signed a union-backed pension plan that reduces the deficit by $50 million a year. Under the Adachi plan, $100 million a year of that deficit is cut, but guess what? It doesn't deal with health care, okay? Both of these measures just kick the can down the road and leaving the taxpayer with billions in unfunded liabilities at a growing rate. We're like the other cities across the country that have gone into bankruptcy. We're like a car going down that road 100 miles an hour. Under the Ed plan, we hit it at 95 miles an hour. Under the Adachi plan, we hit it at 90. The only serious solution is a fundamental...
Oh, of course. There's a follow-up question. Okay, we're... You know there's time constraints, Tony. Tony, in August, you submitted a form to the Department of Elections stating that, quote, nearly 100% of my current income is the retirement benefits I earned while serving in city administrative positions. Would you be willing to give up a percentage of your benefits as part of your reform package? And if so, how much would be appropriate?
Absolutely. As I was saying, the only plan that will work is a fundamental plan that brings all benefits for new hires in line with the private sector, and this includes defined contributions and 401ks. That way the taxpayer is not stuck with a lifetime of pension costs for every worker. Would I be willing to give up mine? Absolutely. It's not that much. I started in the 60s, don't forget.
Okay. Thank you. Next up is Ed Lee. Question on jobs. Oh, I apologize. Before I go on, Joanna and Leland are the two remaining rebuttal card holders, so just holler. I don't want to run over you if you wish to use them. Ed Lee, question on jobs. You recently unveiled a 17-point plan to create jobs in San Francisco. My question is, why 17? Why not? Okay. No, the question is, please discuss the highlights of that plan.
Thank you. In order to create local jobs, I think we have to make sure we grow our own economy. We can't depend upon anybody else. And so when we made the decisions about Twitter to make sure those jobs stayed, we made decisions there with those companies and with the interest that we would save 2,500 jobs, and we've done that. Same with Zynga, same with Salesforce. This Monday, I unveiled a 17-point plan that has ideas in it that will help our local small and medium-sized businesses grow their businesses to make sure so that they can hire more people. Companies like SF Made, companies like El Cafe, Phil's Coffee, Rickshaw Bags, where I collaborated with the Small Business Commission to make sure small businesses like Heat Ceramics can get started and manufacture San Francisco-made products. We have the talent in the city. We just have to make sure that they're supported, and I have a 17-point plan, and you can read it at mayoredlee.com. Thank you. Right.
One element of your 17-point plan involves the creation of, quote, the job squad that will put experts from City Hall into neighborhoods to, quote, offer direct assistance and advice to small businesses in permitting, cutting red tape, navigating the city government and available services. This sounds a lot like the Small Business Assistance Center, which has not been able to get the cooperation of various city departments. How will the job squad succeed where the SBAC has failed?
Do you remember those times when technology was just coming into the city and you had these Volkswagens that went around to companies? They're called the Geek Squad. In order for us to help out businesses, we have to go out to where they are, evaluate where the merchant quarters are, what vacancies exist, how we can help them establish their businesses, cut red tape, and make sure that they are connected with financial entities that can help them along. We can't do that sitting at City Hall. The Job Squad is our best team that we're using at Mid-Market to go out to the business.
Thank you. Joanna would like to use her R card. 30 seconds, Joanna.
We need to eliminate the employee payroll tax systemically across the city and not do one-off deals for specific companies. We also need to eliminate taxing stock options. I have been talking about creating an Office of Entrepreneurial Services since I talked about running for mayor that would go out to so many of the great entrepreneurs who start here and tell them, you're important, and this is how we're going to steward you through the process of this is so distracting with a hand here, sorry, in terms of establishing yourself in the city.
You managed just fine. Bless you, Caroline. We're going to... Our next question is for David Chu. Question about jobs. David, as mayor, how would you create and protect jobs in San Francisco?
I think job growth is the number one issue that the next mayor has to focus on. We have lost 30,000 jobs over the past 2 years, hundreds of companies. There are four things I would do. First, we have hundreds of fees that are nickeling and diming the 80,000 businesses in town. I've eliminated dozens of them. We can do better. Secondly, completely agree with Joanna Reese about the need to reform our business tax. We're the only city in the state of California that penalizes the hiring of labor. I've actually led this effort over the last 3 years. We need to do better. Third, we have to change our contracting process. We contract over $1 billion a year out to the private sector. Most of these contracts are awarded to non-San Francisco businesses, not to our local and diverse businesses. I've tried to change this process, but it's been very frustrating. We can do better. And fourthly, we have 15 city departments, city bureaucracies that regulate the private sector. The left hand ain't talking to the right hand, ain't talking to the left foot, ain't talking to the right foot. It's very, very difficult. We've known about this for years. We have to consolidate those departments.
Thank you. David, you claim you want to consolidate these 15 departments and eliminate more fees. You've been the president of the Board of Supervisors since January of 2009. Why haven't you been able to do more to accomplish these goals so far?
So it took me about a year to get some department heads to even tell me what fees they had. Last year, I passed legislation to eliminate about 4 dozen of these fees, but it's like been pulling teeth to try to get bureaucrats to share information. When it comes to the contracting process, I've been talking about contracting reform. I can't get information out of the executive branch to really streamline that process. We spend on smaller contracts about 20 cents on the dollar from one bureaucrat taking a piece of paper, giving it to another bureaucrat, and so on and so on. We have to do better. And
thank you. Next question is from Michaela Aliotto-Peer. Question about the America's Cup. Michaela, you co-sponsored the legislation that was passed in December 2010, approving the host and venue agreement for the America's Cup in 2013. Describe specifically how you, as mayor, would ensure that the jobs created by this event are not lost at the conclusion of the race.
Thank you, Melissa. I think it's a great question because one of our greatest assets is the Port of San Francisco. It's also one of our most underutilized assets. Before joining the Board of Supervisors, I sat on the Port Commission for 9 months. And what we have learned through time in San Francisco is that the cruise ship industry can be a huge economic generator for us. It is reported that it could bring $15 billion to our local economy here in San Francisco. The current America's Cup deal would help us rebuild 27. But in the long term, we need to look at the other assets on our pier. We need to look at 35, which is the current one that we have that needs to be restructured. And we should look at opportunities further south in closer to the Bayview Hunters Point area. When you bring cruise ships in, they can bring in literally thousands of new jobs. They support hundreds of small businesses. And that opportunity is there for us, but it is going to take more negotiating, and it is a longer term outlook.
Thank you. You can clap. Are you concerned at all that city officials continue to pave the way to give the event authority long-term development rights to several ports, specifically Pier 29, that will impede our ability to control those spaces and to ensure continued employment in San Francisco?
One of San Francisco's dirty little secrets is that because of BCDC regulations around the bay, once the piers fall into the water, we can't rebuild them. And so it is incumbent on us to save the resources that we have. But the truth of the matter is that without the America's Cup, we don't have those resources. And so we are presently losing a lot of what would help us maintain our standing as the Port of San Francisco. So we do need the Event Authority to help us reestablish our strength.
Okay, all right, thank you. Leland, holding out with his R card. Leland, you're next with a question about transparency in government. Leland, discuss your record in increasing transparency in government and other government-funded entities.
Well, for me, an open government, transparent government is pivotal to having a good government. I co-sponsor the Sunshine Ordinance in the city and county of San Francisco. I, in the legislature, have done more than anybody else in that legislature to open up all of our government entities, including UC. We have fought hard, and finally we were able to pass a compromise piece of legislation that even opens up the dealings of exorbitant salaries and contracts within UC. If you don't have an open government, you can do all the good work that you will have and you want, but it is not accountable. I am not beholden to any of the power brokers, unlike my colleague here at Lee. We have to open up and ensure that there is, in fact, transparency and accountability in City Hall and not a closed government to power brokers.
Hey, none of that. Leland D., you introduced a bill to require California courts to provide same-day access to court filings. In light of the severe recent budget cuts to the state court system, San Francisco Superior Court, for example, just laid off 75 people and closed 14 courts, how do you plan to fund such a transparency requirement?
Well, that bill now is a two-year bill. It is extremely important that any filing is, in fact, available to anyone so that there is an ability to understand exactly what's going on in our courts and who's involved in whatever actions against each other. So I think that accountability and that openness needs to happen. It is balanced with this concern about how much money it is going to be at the court, and we're working that out.
All righty. Thank you. Since you're the only one with an R card, I think we could move right along. Paul Currier, question about corruption. Paul, you have called City Hall, quote, a cesspool of organized crime, unquote.
That's true.
Please elaborate. Everybody's mad you used your R card now, aren't you?
Wow, what a treat. I only have 60 seconds, so I want to point out that without any regime change, there's not going to be any change in City Hall. What Bobby Kennedy called organized crime, it's defined as racketeering in the RICO Act. You can look it up online. When this type of a controlled organization runs something like local government with a $7 billion budget, that's a recipe for graft and corruption, and we all know it's been going on for decades. Somebody needs to come in, start firing the inside team of the official family, and set up a new blood in the system, people that care about not having all these non-competitive contracts and so on. I want to close really quickly with the concept that we have 450 acres being stolen at Treasure Island from the people of California. The systemic fraud is off the chain.
All righty. So, Paul, you've said that a large budget plus various factors at City Hall lead to corruption. Why should the voters trust that you are above all of these corrupting influences of city politics?
One of the things we need to do right away is we need to change the laws so that all the nonprofits that take money from the city's general fund, from the mayor's office, from the mayor's inside team, all those nonprofits must release their non-audit status. Most people don't know you can't audit a nonprofit. We need all the nonprofits to be auditable, and we need to have full transparency. Let's just put it all up on the web, stop the hidden contracts. And
okay, thank you very much. No, seriously. Leland Yee, finally using that R card. Leland, 30 seconds.
You know, I have to agree with much of what Paul said. You know, you just heard on this panel, you had members who are running for mayor basically saying that they can't get information. They can't get budget information. They can't get information about IT. They can't get information about contracts. This is the problem within the city and county of San Francisco. We have a government that is closed to the general public. Even elected officials can. I have a book that talks about how we will open government. I want you to hold me accountable.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Next up, Wilma Pang, question for you about arts and culture. Professor Pang, how would you improve the state of arts and culture in San Francisco?
In one broad stroke and one breath, remember in the 50s we had the beatniks, in the 60s we had the Summer of Love and the hippies, in the 70s the neighborhoods got together and we established the Neighborhood Arts Center, such as Bayview and Mission. Okay, in the 80s, I was actually organizer for the Neighborhood Arts Program. But then I was recruited to go to Australia to work as a consultant for the arts. So when I came back, I was the Moon Festival organizer for Chinatown after the down on the freeway. So what I'm saying is, art is my forte, and also right now it's really that something that I did not anticipate. I organized the citizens in Chinatown to play music at night.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Pang, how would you go about publicly funding programs for the arts, and are you in favor of publicly funding programs for the arts?
Okay. Well, right now, the grants for the arts, and there are a lot of other hook up with the Art Commission. But the problem is, you know, the corrupt government. I'm a fully, you know, performing artist, but I never can get my grants through because I'm not inside.
Alrighty, thank you very much, Wilma. Next up, Phil Ting. Question about transparency in government. Phil, what is your plan for increasing transparency in San Francisco government?
Well, thanks, Melissa. I agree, like most of you, that if the 300 insiders and all the politicians up here could have solved all our problems, they'd be solved. What's really missing from City Hall is your voice, all of you. And that's really why we've created tools to help you do that. On Reset San Francisco, if you go there, there's information to help empower all of you to get more information to take that back into your own hands. For example, how do you know if you can reform Muni if you don't even know what the details of what's happening at Muni are? That's why we partner with California Common Sense to help demystify our city's budget, to help demystify some of the performance measures at Muni so you can see whether or not, if you're giving Muni more money, whether that's paying off or not paying off. That's why we're going around town doing 8 town halls to talk about Muni, not to tell you what we know, but really to ask you as writers what you know. That's why we're talking to folks on the NJUDA, the El Terraval. We have apps that tell us how late Muni is going to be. We need an app to help us fix Muni.
Alrighty. I think we might get to that soon. Later in the program. Phil, recent polls show that 1/3 of voters have not decided on who they will vote for in the November mayor election. A large percentage of people don't even know that there is an election. Even if citizens had access to all the information possible, how can you be sure that they would have the time or interest to consult it?
We've reached out to thousands of San Franciscans. What's amazing is we've organized town halls to talk about shocking things like issues. We had a Muni town hall where almost 300 people came out to the Hall of Flowers to talk about how to fix the bus system. And the best thing was, when I walked in the room, I didn't know 80% of the people. They were just regular folks who rode the NJUDA, who rode the One California, who rode the 30 Stockton. And all they wanted to do was fix the system, make it faster, more reliable. Remember, 1 minute equals $20 million in Muni.
Alrighty, so that is the end of this round. Everyone give the candidates a big round of applause. We are on schedule. Thank you, candidates. Now we're moving into round 3. Please grab your yes and no cards. I usually like to have them on one side or the other. That way you can't hold them both, as Bevan will undoubtedly try to do. Okay, so we're going to ask a series of yes or no questions, and you guys are going to have to bear with me because we're going to ask these, and the candidates are going to hold up their answers, and then I'm going to have to tally them up and sort of allow the persons who are listening on the radio to get this information. So I'm going to have to sort of walk through that as soon as we're done. So I have 5 questions here. Question number 1, Proposition B on the November ballot would authorize the city to issue up to $258 million in general obligation bonds to fund street repairs, including repaving roads. Hold them up whenever you want. Sidewalk improvements and ADA compliance. Opponents say that the bonds should not be used for what should be a regular part of the city's budget, but proponents say that failure to act now will result in exponentially higher costs to make the repairs later. Are you for or against Proposition B? Okay, Michaela, you guys bear with me while I tally here. Do you know your answer? Okay. Jeff Adachi is no. Dennis, you're a yes. Elise, yes. Leland Yee, yes. Bevan Duffy, you're a yes? Okay. Terbaum is a yes. Caesar, what are you? You can't get to, you don't. Are you? He's missing a no card. He would like a no. He's going to make it himself. That's how passionate he feels about issuing no. No, John Avalos is a yes. Joanna Reese is a no. That's okay. That would not be a good idea. Okay. All right. So to recap here, we have Michael Aliotto-Pierre as a yes, Phil Ting as a yes, Paul Currier as a no, David Chu as a yes. I can't read my handwriting. Emil Lawrence as a no, Jeff Adachi as a no, Dennis Herrera as a yes, Ed Lee as a yes, Leland Yee as a yes, Bevan Dufty as a yes, Wilma Pang as a yes, Terry Baum as a yes, Caesar as a no, Avalos as a yes, Joanna Reese as a no, and Tony Hall as a no. Thank you very much, candidates. Next up, Proposition G on the November ballot would authorize the city to increase its sales tax to 0.5% for 10 years to fund programs for children, the elderly, and public safety. I know what you're going to do, Edley. In June of this year, a 1% sales tax. In June of this year, a 1% state sales tax, lapsed. And if that tax were reinstated, this local sales tax would be null and void. Currently, San Francisco's sales tax rate is 8.5%, most of which goes to the state, with the city receiving about 1%. Are you in favor of Proposition G on the November ballot? Everyone is a yes. Dennis, I'm okay. Wilma Pang is a no. Pang is a no. Caesar is a no. Okay, all candidates are yes, except for Wilma Pang, Caesar, and Tony Hall. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, were you a no? I apologize. Emil was a no? I apologize. Emil Lawrence, also a no. Well, that doesn't look promising. Okay, next up. Do you support the mid-market tax incentive program, commonly known as the Twitter tax break, as it was passed? Lawrence is a no. Jeff Adachi, can you hold? Oh, Jeff Adachi is a no. Oh, thanks. Okay.
Well, systemically.
Avalos is a no. Okay, so our no's are Paul Currier, Emil Lawrence, Jeff Adachi, Wilma Pang, Terry Baum, Caesar, and John Avalos. Next up, California's three strikes law, which requires, among other things, a minimum sentence of 25 years to life for three-time repeat offenders with multiple prior serious or violent felony convictions, is the law in California. In light of the fact that the state is going to require localities to shoulder the burden of jailing perpetrators of nonviolent, non-sexual crimes here in San Francisco, are you in favor of California's three strikes law? Wow. Cesar has used his yes card. Okay. Everyone else was a no. Thank you, candidates. Final question. The legal fight over whether to publicly release the Proposition 8 trial tapes in which witnesses testified for or against gay marriage. The legal fight over whether those tapes should be released is seemingly never ending. Do you, candidates, believe that the tapes should be released? Yes or no? Everyone, Caesar?
It's a personal issue. I cannot say yes or no. It's a personal.
The tapes are a personal issue for Caesar. He's not going to weigh in. All right. You can. We'll just think about that. Okay, everyone. Everyone else was a yes.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I apologize. Tony Hall. Tony Hall was a no. Thank you very much, candidates. That concludes our little yes or no round. Thank you for participating.
Michaela.
And not being too cute. Okay. How are we doing on schedule? We're doing great. Awesome. Woo, 16 candidates. I was nervous. Alrighty, so in this round, we're going to basically give two candidates at a time one single issue and allow them to discuss their points on the issue. Each candidate is going to get 60 seconds. It's not really a back and forth. I'll indicate which candidate goes first, and then the candidate after that person will have 60 seconds. So what I'm going to do is tee up each of these subjects and let the candidates have a little, again, sort of back and forth, but again, 60 seconds and then 60 seconds, and I will tell you who goes first. First up, Michaela Alioto-Peer and Leland Yee. Michaela, you were in favor of the Park Merced housing development project. Leland Yee, you've indicated that you are against the Park Merced Housing Development Project. Could you each please discuss your position and the reasons why you hold it? Michaela, if you could go first. 60 seconds.
Thank you, Melissa. I supported the Park Merced project, most importantly, because it is a housing project that finally targets our families. The units are larger. They have three bedrooms in them. It helps us hit a targeted middle-class family market that San Francisco has been lacking. It also creates 3,500 jobs over the next, I think it's 20 years, and it'll bring $35 million into our local economy. On the whole, it's a good, strong project for San Francisco, and we should see more like this one.
Thank you. Leland, 60 seconds.
Well, on the whole, I am supportive of increasing density, particularly in the western part of this particular city, particularly around the area of the Park Merced. The concern that I had with this particular issue had to do with a lot of neighbors and organizations out there concerned about the congestion. I've spent the last 5 years trying to improve the safety along 19th Avenue. And then finally, our inability to ensure the affordability, the rent control units within those particular, within that particular development concerns me quite a bit. You know, I've got to do everything that I can to protect that affordability, given the fact that now the state and local government no longer have the ability to require those affordable units coming out of these developments.
Okay. Thank you very much, candidates. Next up, Jeff Adachi and Bevan Dufty. Bevan, in 2009, you voted against expanding, while at the Board of Supervisors, you voted against expanding, quote, just cause evictions to all rental units built after 1979. Jeff Adachi, you were recently endorsed by the San Francisco Tenants Union. Could you each just please take a moment to discuss your position with regard to affordable housing and tenants' rights? Bevan Dufty, please go first.
Yes. I feel that too much in San Francisco, we legislate to the extremes. We really focus on the most vexatious landlords or the most difficult tenants. And what is the result of it? We have 10,000 flats and apartments in San Francisco that aren't being rented predominantly by small property owners because they're afraid of having these types of battles. And I think that that's bad for our city. And what this law sought to do was to say that if you owned a condominium and you went away to study for 2 years and wanted to come back, you'd have to go through a just cause court-like eviction process, which I think is unreasonable and unfair. And I think we have to work to bring people together and not divide them because I think it drives up costs and it limits our inventory, which is bad for San Francisco.
Okay. Thank
you. Just to clarify, John Avalos received the endorsement of the tenant rights organization. I received the endorsement of the tenant association coalition and the tenants' rights organization. I just wanted to make sure we clarified that.
I apologize.
Yeah. I believe that we have to protect rent-controlled housing in San Francisco. However, at the same time, I realize the difficult position that a lot of homeowners are in, particularly those who have tenancy in common. And what's happened during the recession is that many of these folks bought, you know, in, before 2008, and they have these huge mortgages that they owe as a tenancy in common. And then they're not able to essentially refinance their units and bring the cost down. Now, one could argue that obviously they knew that they were purchasing a tenancy in common. But at the same time, the wait for this is something like 14 years. So this is something that I would make a priority of my administration because we got to get more housing.
Thank you, Jeff. Next up, Joanna Reese and Tony Hall. There we go. How convenient. Joanna, this is your first time running for office. Your background is in business. Tony Hall, you've spent 35 years in the public sector. Could each of you please take a minute to discuss what is it that experience means in this mayor's race? Joanna, please go first.
So, I'm sorry. What you said, what? I missed it. I got distracted again.
Wow. Sorry. Joanna Reese. Distracted. Okay. Joanna, what I said was, come on. What I said was, this is your first time running for office, and your background is in business. And Tony Hall has been in the public sector for 35 years. Could each of you please discuss what your experience brings to the table and what experience means in this mayor's race? Joanna, please go first.
The most important experience for our next mayor is being a proven leader. Leadership is about setting a vision. It's about making sure that you have the right team and then holding that team accountable. And in the case of city government, with complete transparency to everyone in the community. So I also have served on more than 40 boards where I've had no hierarchical authority over anyone. And when you serve on boards, you work very hard to find common ground. Where it's really about, I always say, learning the art of influence in terms of engaging with people to find that common ground to move the entity forward. And in my experience, if there's ever been an issue with anyone, it's about working that out one-on-one so that we have respectful discourse with one another and we're able to accomplish things. I'm going to let you go.
I certainly appreciate the experience in the private sector, but having spent 35 years as an executive and administrator in 9 different departments in city government, I can tell you there's no correlation. Government doesn't run like business, although many of us think it should. But when you allocate resources, direct personnel, and write budgets for 9 different departments like I have, you know how the city works. More importantly, you know how it should be working. That's not experience you can pick up in the private sector. It's a different skill art. And that's why I'm running for mayor, to use my 35 years experience. We have to return to zero-based budgeting. We have to look at half a dozen different things that are not in the private sector. A public administrator is different. I'm sure that Ed can back this up. He's got the same similar background to mine, but with half the time. So it's... It's just.
Thank you, Tony. Next up, Phil Ting and Emil Lawrence. Could each of you please discuss in detail and the specifics what your plans are for how we should fix Muni? Emil, please go first. That's you. Yeah.
You want me to speak first, or you?
Yes.
Repeat your whole question here.
How would you fix Muni?
I'm going to tell you something. This is going to take more than 3 minutes, but I'm going to do it in 1 minute. I plan to sell Muni outright to the bus drivers that already drive. I have driven a taxi in this city for 14 years. I wrote the column, The Night Cabby, for approximately 8 years. I've watched the taxi industry balloon into a cash cow for MTA, and I've watched also the MTA with all their abuses through their union system blow hundreds of millions of dollars on useless material. I think what we would do is put a medallion system in place. I would revamp MTA by turning it into a limousine, taxi, jitney, and shuttle commission. And at the same time, each bus driver would own its own bus. And also, last but not least, when a taxi drives by and it's empty, he's not making any money. But a bus driver drives by with an empty bus, he's still being paid 8 to 25 bucks an hour or whatever he's making, plus his pension. And that's all going to change. It's going to be a cash cow when I'm in charge. Thank you.
Thank you. Phil Ting.
Well, I'm not going to sell Muni, but I am going to give it back to the people. I'm going to make sure that we give it back to the people, because right now we have hundreds of thousands of people that rely on Muni every single day to get to work, to get to school, and to get their families back and forth, and we need to take back control of Muni. Most of us probably didn't even know that there was a transit effectiveness project that was passed by Muni, an excellent plan that they spent $3 million on to tell us exactly how we can fix the system, make it faster and more reliable. And guess how many of those recommendations have been implemented since the report was finished in 2008? Anybody want to take a wild guess? Not very many. I heard zero. They're probably pretty close. What we can do, the recommendations are actually very good. We can make sure the stoplights are really transit first, so that when the buses and the rail lines come up, that the lights turn green, because we are a transit first city. We can make sure we have more pedestrian safety so it gets faster and we can board through multiple doors. So again, all we need to do is implement that plan that the agency submitted.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Next up, John Avalos and Cesar Oscaruns. Gentlemen, do you feel like the Board of Supervisors has done enough to expedite the permitting process and to help small business owners? Cesar, if you could go first.
I've been fighting for the Board of Supervisors. I delivered to Mr. Bevan Duffy to open a business in the port. I delivered to the only supervisors 11 envelopes 5 times. They never even care about that. People, they asked me, I was very successful in the entertainment business. The black community, they told me, Cesar, can you help us the Bayview, the 3rd Street corridor? I tried to open a business in the Pier 80. So the beautiful, those, I'm sorry to say, unprofessional commissioners of the port and the people they get paid by the city hall, or they take the orders from the mayors, they deny me. They want a high-class places. They want me to invest hundreds and hundreds of thousands in something which is, it will never happen. I give my plans are beautiful, but they always very, very negative. Thank you. We have to change that.
Thank you. John?
Clearly, no, we have not done enough to support the streamlining the process for starting new businesses in San Francisco. I've been a proponent of the adding new staff to the Small Business Administration. This year we actually did that. We added new staff to help with that. But we don't actually look at how our resources are shared equitably around San Francisco. In my district, along Ocean Avenue and on Geneva and Mission Street, we don't have as much attention from the city to be able to support small businesses that are in those neighborhoods. Yet we see on Divisadero, there's a lot of great businesses that are starting up, and there's a lot of programming that's going there and dollars that are going there to help businesses have facade improvement programs to do retrofits for technology. That doesn't happen in my district. We have to have a plan that works in every neighborhood, and one that looks at some of the lower-income neighborhoods and how they can be brought up as well. And so I'd like to be able to look at how we can streamline the process, looking at income levels and neighborhoods that are really shut out from the processes at City Hall.
Right.
Thank you. Next up, Terry Baum and David Chu. Terry Baum, you're a Green Party candidate. David Chu, you were also a co-sponsor of the legislation that allowed the city to contract to bring the America's Cup to San Francisco. The current draft environmental impact report for the America's Cup has been criticized as not going far enough to protect San Francisco's air, water, and marine life by specific environmental groups. Could each of you please discuss the green aspects of the America's Cup? Terry, if you could go first.
Yes, I'm very concerned that the organizers of the America's Cup, especially Larry Ellison, are driving a really bad bargain for San Francisco, particularly in the Embarcadero where the Cupid's bow is. There's going to be a yacht harbor built, and according to the agreement that the Board of Supervisors has negotiated, which includes, of course, David Chu, if they have to dredge the harbor so that they can have these super yachts, these giant yachts come, then they will be compensated for the expense of dredging the harbor with the right to build a commercial marina after the America's Cup is over. That's part of the agreement. I think that's absolutely outrageous. That beautiful part of the Embarcadero will be taken away from the people of San Francisco, and we'll be looking at the behinds of rich people.
I think the word boats got cut off there. I just want to make sure that people listening at home know what was said there. Okay. David Chu.
I don't know how to follow up with that one. But I was proud last year to work with Gavin Newsom to negotiate to bring the America's Cup here to San Francisco. Initially, it was proposed for the southern waterfronts. But when there were issues raised around the environmental concerns and budget concerns, I proposed that we put it in the northeast waterfront. And I think that there are so many things that we've done in these agreements to make sure that the city is protected. Larry Ellison can propose, if he wants, to consider developing in certain places, but he has to go through all of the full approvals of the city. And we will need to make sure that there is actually community support for any project that moves forward. I completely agree with Terry Baum that we should not have a harbor for super yachts in the bay, and we certainly have protections to make sure that that does not happen. But at the end of the day, this is an opportunity to showcase San Francisco to millions of folks, to bring $1.4 billion of economic activity to San Francisco, and to make sure we're using resources to really rebuild our waterfront and our bay. And that's why I've supported this project.
Okay. Thank you. Next up, Dennis Herrera and Ed Lee. The Central Subway Project is an extension of the... Oh, yeah. We're going there. Is an extension of the Muni Metro Light Rail System in San Francisco. Oh, no, it's not yes or no time. From the Caltrain Commuter Rail Depot at 4th and King Streets all the way to Chinatown. Ed Lee, you've been in favor of this project. Herrera, you've voiced your opposition. Could each of you please explain your positions? Ed Lee, please go first.
Thank you. The Central Subway is in response to good planning on behalf of our city, as well as federal and state officials for over two decades. The new housing in San Francisco, over 10,500 new homes are already under construction in the Bayview, Hunters Point, Candlestick area, already under construction. Businesses are being established along 3rd Street. We have to find alternative transportation routes that don't put more cars on the street because of the population increase that we have. In addition to the federal, state, and local official approvals for the last decade, even a local planning organization called SPUR, one of the best organizations that have been planning all over the city, have confirmed that this is a good transit system. We have to have the system in place for the future, and 33,000 construction jobs are at risk, and we hope that politics doesn't make a play to kill this very...
Yeah. Thank you.
I disagree with the mayor. The project is not the same project that voters voted on in 2003 when it cost $653 million for 1.7 miles and is now ballooned to $1.6 billion for 1.7 miles. The route has been changed. The direct connections to the rest of the Muni system have been eliminated. Cost estimates continue to soar. Its impact on Muni's operational budget has soured. The ridership projections have plummeted, and we are going to be responsible for every single cost overrun of a project that has already gone up three times before we've even gotten started. And in terms of connecting communities, you have a direct connection now to the rest of the Muni Metro system with the existing system, which will be eliminated if this system is built to serve only 5,000 new residents in Chinatown. And some folks have said, we're going to get that federal money, so we got to take it. That's like saying Barry Zito continues to need to be in the starting rotation because we signed him at $126 million.
You steal my Barry Zito line. You never give me credit. Okay, next, Paul Currier and Wilma Pang. Similar question. Wilma, you have stated, and I hope this is correct, that you were a founding member of SaveMuni.org. Is that right?
What is?
You're a founding member of SaveMuni.org?
Yes.
Yes. And that is an organization that is opposed to the Central Subway Project, yes?
Well, start that organization in December, we actually wanted to give a better idea how to use the money for Central Subway. And since I live in Chinatown for the last 35 years, I can speak up that not everybody's in support of the Central Subway. So the Muni, SaveMuni.org is really in planning to how to improve Muni, not just Central Subway.
Okay, thank you. And Paul Currier, you've indicated before that you're in favor of an extended subway system actually throughout San Francisco. Is that correct? And if so, please explain.
I lived in Prague for 4.5 years, and those of you that have been to Prague know what a wonderful city that is. 85% of that 1.5 million people use public transit as a primary transit, and in their 7 months of winter, everything runs like clockwork on time. Nobody waits for anything. You know, in San Francisco, if we start with a clean sheet of paper, so we have a public bank, and we have $1 to $5 trillion to work with, let's put people to work. Treat San Francisco like a city state. Forget Sacramento. Forget the feds. Let's adult up, grow up, and be responsible for our own finances. We'll build our own Muni system. We'll build our own internal subway underneath everything that connects everything and allows us to use the light rails and the buses to feed our neighborhoods. There's no reason we can't get from one side of a 7-mile city to the other side in less than 15 minutes. And it should be for free.
Well, already. since we are at the end of this round, I thought it might be fun. Since everyone's got yes or no plaques and we've been talking about the Central Subway, why don't we do another, a final little poll? If you are in favor of the Central Subway as proposed and currently initiated, or against, yes or no? Okay, so Paul Courier is a no. Okay, Emil. Wait, Dennis, I can't see yours. Very terrible. And Tony Hall is a no. So let me just get this right. Paul Courier, Emil Lawrence, Dennis Herrera, Wilma Pang, Terry Baum, Cesar, and Tony Hall are all on the no's. And Jeff Adachi was a no. All others are yeses. Thanks very much. And please give the candidates a round of applause for making it through this round. In this round, Beth is going to take over.
Is this on? Oh, hi. Okay, so two people submitted questions, or actually millions of people submitted questions on the Huffington Post San Francisco, and two of them were selected to ask their questions here today. So, two of you showed up. Three of you actually were selected, but two of you. You want us, ladies first? Shall we? All right, will you tell all of us and the candidates your name, and what is your question?
Oh, my name is Judy Lee, and my question is... As has been mentioned previously, San Francisco's budget is $6.8 billion, which is almost twice the combined budget of Oakland and Alameda County. So as mayor, how will you ensure that we are getting our money's worth?
Okay, excellent question. Each candidate will have, do you have 30 seconds? 30 seconds to answer that question, but only eight of you are going to get asked it because we have two questions, eight and eight. So let's start with, let's have Wilma Pang, Tony Hall, Terry Baum, Phil Ting, Paul Courier, Michaela Alioto-Peer, Leland Yee, and John Avalos all answer. Don't worry, I'll go back over that in just a moment. So let's start. Wilma Pang, 30 seconds to answer the audience question.
The question again? I'm a hard hearing. You're hearing. I'm not Beethoven.
Could you have the candidate? Could you have the audience member ask her question again?
So San Francisco's budget is $6.8 billion, which is almost twice the combined budgets of Oakland and Alameda County. So as mayor, how will you ensure that we are getting our money's worth?
Well, we have to boost tourism because nobody talks about it. And tourism is the cash cow for this city. What I would do is, since I'm an artist, I would like to make San Francisco a renaissance of the 21st century.
Thank
using
you.
That money, it's going to be... generate money instead of spending the money.
Thank you, Wilma. Tony Hall.
Ma'am, our budget is three times higher than it was under the Jordan years 20 years ago. It's higher than 22 states in the union. You know why? Because we don't have zero-based budgeting. That went out with the Agnos years. Zero-based budgeting where you have to justify every penny every year from zero. What they do now is they add a COLA on. And so within 7 to 10 years, the budget automatically doubles. I'm the only guy that's worked under that system. We have to go back to that system if you want.
Oh, Tony, you're used to a microphone. Terry Baum.
There's been many ideas already suggested, competitive bidding, transparency, but I think we have to acknowledge that we have other responsibilities in Oakland. We have a very large airport, part of our budget. And also, I think we have to acknowledge that government is not always going to be completely efficient, just as no human activity is efficient. Somehow, we expect government to be perfect, but is our effort to be our best selves and take care of the weakest.
Thank you, Terry. Phil Ting.
I think we need a lot more transparency and a lot more accountability throughout the system. When I took over the assessor's office, I understood and went through all the job duties for everybody in my office. I did the same thing in the city. We need to understand and take a look at what all the operators and all the staff are doing at Muni to make sure that they're doing the best job they can do every single day. We need to define what that job is, and we need to hold them accountable. And I'd go from there to the building inspection, the planning department, and the police department, and on and on. But it's important that we set measures and hold them accountable.
Thank you, Phil. Paul Courier.
Transparency, auditing, these are great ideas. There's no reason we can't put the record of our expenditures online for everybody to see. Everybody in the world, why not? Let's show the world how a good city runs efficiently and correctly for the public interest. I'd like to point out, we're not getting our money's worth, and we're not going to get our money's worth with a official family that's been bilking this city for over $1 billion per year for the last.
Thank you, Paul. Michaela Elliott-O'Pierre.
I spent, for starters, this is much more than 30 seconds, but I spent 3 years working for Vice President Gore. What we did was the Reinventing Government Initiative for our federal departments. San Francisco has one of the largest bureaucracies per capita of any other city in the country. We do need a zero-based budget, at least for the first year. We should have a searchable database so that people know how our money is being spent, particularly with our nonprofits, and we need to bring a lot of our different departments together. Planning and DBI is one of the most obvious. We could save us $2 million and streamline the whole process.
Thank you, Michaela. Leland Yee.
You know, I would start by making sure that we would not give golden parachutes of $500,000 for doing nothing. That's what I would start out. And I would then take the book that I talked about of open government transparency and making an independent city hall, not controlled by power brokers, but really controlled by all of you. And then I would make sure that Joanna is going to be able to get all the documents that she wants and needs to understand the budget. That's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to open the door of City Hall to all of you. Know exactly how we're spending the money.
Okay, thank you very much. John Avalos.
Thank you for the question. A big part of our budget is assessed by the Comptroller's Office, and when we're closely with the Comptroller's Office and our financial plans, making sure that we are following the financial plans that we are adopting as a city. I want to reward good work. When workers are doing a good job, making sure that we can actually boost morale and continue their efforts to do better work. I want to look at our MOUs and how we do contracting with our unions, making sure that we don't approve contracts that we can't afford in future years. And I'll make sure that public has greater input on giving feedback on our budgets as well.
Thank you, John. Beth, if you would like to have the next questioner.
Come on up. Let's ask your question. So in the light, I would hate to deny your moment. I'm okay. Your name and your question, sir.
My name is Tom Sleckman. And it's great to see you, Melissa. I'm a great fan of your column. And it's great to see Emil here. And I always kind of thought that you were the night cabbie. But my question is about your ideas for DBI reform. And in doing research on this question of this possibly this most Kafkaesque branch of our municipal government, I turned to Yelp and noted these comments in 17 reviews of DBI. First of all, if you want a totally frustrating day that will leave you prone to violence, I would recommend a visit to the Department of Building Inspection and Planning Department. A nice place to visit if you like negative attitudes. If you want to do work on your home in San Francisco, move to Novato. The system literally discourages people from improving their properties legally and legitimately. The place is horrible. The people are imbeciles, one word useless, Soviet Union in San Francisco, the most inefficient bureaucratic alignment of BS I've ever had the displeasure of experiencing. So again, my question to the candidates is, what are your ideas for DBI reform?
Thank you.
Thank you, erudite questioner, obviously with excellent taste. So candidates who are going to answer that question are Joanna Reese, Jeff Adachi, Emil Lawrence, Ed Lee, Dennis Herrera, David Chu, Cesar Oscaruns, and Bevan Dufty. But we will go back through that slowly. Joanna Reese, 30 seconds.
We need to create a culture within City Hall where department heads are rewarded to continually find ways to improve service and spend less money. And the way that we need to do that in planning is to streamline and automate, put a lot of the ability to pull permits online rather than having to go through a subjective process where an individual at the counter can decide and stall how things get done.
When I started at the Public Defender's Office, it was one of the worst unresourced offices in the country. You know, public defenders were often referred to as public pretenders. And so when I went in there, I set out to change that by creating performance measures, making sure that every employee was evaluated, providing training and coaching and holding people accountable. We went in 4 years to receive the top award from the American Bar Association for the best law office in the office in the country. And I've been the only...
Yes, thank you. Next, Emil Lawrence.
Very briefly, I have two answers to that question. One is that I worked for HUD for 2 years where I helped ex-cons get apartments on 6th Street, which is 6th and Mission, 6th and Market, which is known as 6th and Mayhem. They get out of prison after 13 to 15 years with $20 in their pocket, not a place to stay. Secondly is that if you look at the city overall, forget all the rhetoric coming from this table, is that this city has been afflicted over the last 30 years. It was white flight and Asian flight. Now it's on the peninsula. They don't live here anymore.
Thank you very much. Ed Lee.
When we created the 3-in-1 system for customer service for residents of San Francisco, we started providing a database in which things could be responded within a reasonable time. We need to set the same standards of DBI in planning. Every permit should be on track with a particular time frame for the kind of category of permits that we would reasonably expect to be turned around. And we need to have that publicly viewed and online for everybody to share so we can hold the managers accountable.
Thank you. Dennis Herrera.
Whether it be DBI, DPW, or planning, we need to insulate the nuts and bolts of city government from political interference. And we used to have that when we had a CAO office where the nuts and bolts of city government were under somebody who couldn't be influenced by the mayor's office or the board of supervisors. That was changed in charter reform in 1995, and it has increased the uncertainty, unpredictability, and quite frankly, disaster that small businesses and individuals are suffering from. We need charter reform to go back to that system so that the public can have confidence.
Thank you, Dennis. David Chu.
Two things for DBI. First of all, we've had so many permits that get lost in the bureaucracy. We decided several years ago that we were going to implement technology to move this through. Millions of dollars and years later, still not done. Secondly, we need to make sure that we don't have pay-to-play when it comes to DBI. We need true transparency. I've been proud to be the person to push tough ethics rules to make sure we know who's lobbying who at City Hall, and we need to make sure that that's clear for DBI.
Thank you, David. Cesar Oscarins.
It took me 3 months to get my permits to build 2 houses in where I live in one and 5 floors on Vernon Heights. But it took another lady 2 years to get a permit to do an apartment. I will clean that corrupted system of the planning department, which they make it, a lot of money, the building department. It's just also it bothers me to open a hall 24 by 24. It takes seven people to open a hall. And thank you very much. I'm going to clean the corruption.
Okay. Devin Duffy.
I sponsored and passed legislation that created an online permit tracking system specifically so you can go to the SFGov website right now and type in an address and see what is the permit history there. So it does exist. I agree that planning and DBI need to be more entrepreneurial and recognize that the small and medium-sized businesses are most impacted by delays. But let's get real. All these people talking about city employees, I'll tell you about a couple of great ones. Ed Sweeney, who's from inside the department, been there decades. We need people not from outside running our department.
Thank you very much. Please give our questioners a round of applause and our lovely Beth Spotswood and the candidates. So, ladies and gentlemen, because we're running a little bit behind schedule, we're going to skip that last 15-second part, and I'm going to close out this part of the presentation, and then just hang with me, and then we're going to move to the GAFTA part of the presentation. So I'm going to do the bang and gavel thing for the people on the radio, and then we'll move on to the part that's more live here, going through each of the 4 presentations. So before we do that, though, please give our candidates a round of applause for making it through, all 16 of them. Okay, so as a reminder to our audience, this program is presented by the Commonwealth Clubs in Forum, Connect Your Intellect. And tonight we're hosting the Race for Mayor 2011. I'm Melissa Griffin. moderator, and Beth Spotswood is our MC. I'm calling this meeting to a close.